a lot of people actually don't have a selling process. They don't actually have a prospecting process. They all think that the sale is going to happen in that first phone call.
You're listening to KBCast, the cybersecurity podcast for all executives. Cutting through the jargon and hype to understand the landscape where risk and technology meet. Now, here's your host, Carissa Breen.
Joining me today is Pancho Mahotra, Director of Frontier Performance. And today we're talking about sales in the cybersecurity space. So Pancho, thank you so much for joining. It's wonderful to have you on the show and welcome.
Thank you. I'm really, really pleased to be here.
This is a big topic. I have spoken about this on the show once before, but it's something that is near and dear to me because I often have people complaining in the vendor did this, consultant did that in this space. I don't have a lot of control or if any over what people do, but all I can do is bring people like yourself on the show to give your insights and your thoughts around what people are doing right and you know what people are doing wrong to improve their sales. So I really want to start with that. You've been in the game for a while.
Yep.
You've seen how sales have changed over time.
Mm-hmm.
So where would you say we're at when it comes to sales? Maybe give me a bit of a lay of the land.
Sure. Let's perhaps talk about what hasn't changed. Sales begins with one of the most important things is to meet the emotional agendas beyond the buy and sell of the transaction with people. Skills levels and understanding people has to keep up with the rate of change in technology, especially security. I often talk about, you know, psychology and technology need to work hand in hand, but we're talking about the psychological aspects of the salesperson. One of the key things I see a lot, which is a challenge, is the lack of specifically selling skills has become even more apparent in the younger generation I meet from vendors to channel partners who tend to prefer emailing and texting while they're working, you know, in trying to move deals forward. And, you know, one of the key things I said to one of these young salespeople was, I don't see many IT managers buying $100,000, $200,000, $500,000 solutions over a text. And so what we're seeing is a lot of people are hiding behind email and texting, trying to move a deal forward, whereas the key fundamental is that if you want to sell and you want to be successful in this business, it's a people-oriented business. You need to speak to people. You need to communicate to people. And I think the art of communicating and getting along with people is diminishing at a rate of knots because we're living in the text generation. But unfortunately, unless you're selling solutions that are text type of sales, you're going to get these people sort of struggling. You know, some of the key principles in sales don't change. You need to have meaningful conversations with people. And the challenge, I think, for many, many salespeople in cybersecurity is that buyers are even more informed than they were before. They're aware of potential solutions. They are aware so much because they've got access to information, which was, you know, you could go in with, you know, features and benefits, but nowadays, the buyers are so well informed, the interaction between a seller and buyer it has now escalated in importance for the salesperson to have a higher interpersonal communication skill. You know, we talk about reading the client. How well can you do that to influence a client? You need to be able to negotiate. No matter how unique the product is, it's not enough now. You know, there's too many conversations still happening with product style salespeople talking about speeds and feeds. And so the ability to have a conversation has not changed. The ability to actually do it has. And that's where I see the biggest change at the present moment is that the inability of people to have good communication skills, actually have high emotional intelligence is something that I see as a deterioration in the sales force. That's my views anyway.
There's a couple of things in there. I do agree with you on the buyers are more informed, which is where what I do / what I sell in the market comes into play because, again, a lot of people do like having, you know, some knowledge about a product or service because they have the internet and podcasts, et cetera.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned something before. You said that people are hiding behind emails and texts when they want to move the deal forward. That I understand. What about when you're opening up a deal? Would you still say that you should? I mean, text I think is a bit wild to just text someone randomly.
Yes.
An email I understand, but Then I've heard from end clients like, hey, KB, random people are just calling me up out of the blue. I feel infuriated by that. So where should people start? Should it be a random phone call that you are a salesperson trying to sell to someone, but then I hear from the opposite end of the client saying, that annoys me, I feel violated, I feel that my privacy is getting walked all over, etc. But then I also hear from what you're saying, because you've been doing this for like 30 years, what is it people should be doing if they want to open up a deal?
I own my own call center that we did all the cold calling for Hewlett Packard and Dell, you know, quite a few years ago. And the biggest challenge that this gentleman is experiencing is that the skills lack of the salesperson to actually open up the call. What I said before is that so many salespeople open up the call doing a dump on someone, feature benefit, and not actually being mindful or respectful of the person to actually get a permission to actually engage on a conversation. That's one of the most important things is, you know, do I have the permission to engage with you? And if you say yes, fantastic. And to keep that as a minimum. I think a lot of people actually are fundamentally don't understand the sales process, which is the first aspect of the sales, if you're doing cold outreach, is to actually have the opportunity to build a conversation. You're not going to sell the product on that call. And I think a lot of salespeople don't actually understand that at that stage, you're actually finding out whether there is a fit there or not. And you're selling the second meeting. You're selling a second conversation. It's about having a conversation and being very, very upfront with the client and being very, very upfront in that, hey, listen, if you get an opportunity to engage with someone on the cold call and they see value in it, great. If they see no value in it, great. Now, I talked about the mentality where a lot of salespeople annoy prospects is they go into a pitch fest immediately. It's because that's all they know is product and features. I have a variety of opening lines, and I don't think I can't remember ever having a bad calling session whereby I've actually said to a client, you don't know me, do you have a second talk? And the guy goes, yeah. And I'll take 30 or 40 seconds to explain why I called. And then you can decide if you want to keep chatting or not. And is that fair enough? I can't actually remember being rejected on that approach. I've got statistics on cold calling scripts. We're mindful that we're empathetic. You know, we ask them if they've got a second to talk. Whereas when we listen to call recordings, the salesperson goes immediately on to saying, hey, this is Bob. This is what we do. Do you have 5 seconds? And I can tell you what we do. And then you can decide. And that goes straight into pitching. There's no empathy. There's no understanding of, you know, have I got you at a time whereby you do have, you know, a minute to talk to me? Then it comes down to skill in script construction. How well do you actually design a script that gets engagement and allows the client to either engage with you or to say, hey, this is not a good time, call me back later on, or, hey, I'm not actually interested, thanks very much for the outreach. You know, I can't actually remember for myself personally and all the clients that we train, we don't actually experience people being rude. I've got to sort of understand it from my point of view is that, well, you know, if you've made over 200,000 cold calls like I have, you soon understand what works and what doesn't work. And what doesn't work is pitching straight away the moment you open a phone call. It's just, you're there to sell a meeting. So I think a lot of people actually don't actually have a selling process. They don't actually have a prospecting process. They all think that the sale is going to happen in that first phone call because we like to be acknowledged. We like to be validated. But if you give up all that, you actually get personal power. And so longer, which affects the tone of your voice, which also affects how you communicate your energy over the phone. When you don't come across as being desperate, people can sense that, and you'll actually see people relax when you're not trying to pitch, trying to close a deal, because you actually understand that this is a conversation and you're trying to figure out whether what you've got actually makes sense for the client. If it doesn't, hey, there's plenty of fish in the sea, but I see this desperation from both a mentality approach and a skill set approach. So this is what I see having listening to cold calls and to listen to reps making calls, and the majority of them go on a features and advantages benefit within seconds of the call and go, what are you doing? You know, I don't even know you, and yet you're trying to sell me something.
Yeah, I love that. And those are really great points. So there's a, okay, there's a couple of things that are coming to my mind. Now, one of the things that you, that I've picked on that you're saying, Pancho, is permission. So yes. For example, I call you out of the blue and I'm like, hey, like my name's Carissa Breen. Is it okay if I have a moment of your time? I'm then asking you directly if I can then have that high level pitch of what I'm trying to sell to you. Whereas I think most people, which I get random calls all the time, most people are like, hey, is that Carissa Breen? I'm like, yes, speaking. They're like, oh, my name's John and I'm here from some, you know, tree business and da da da. And they go into all these statistics and I'm like, I don't know what's going on here. And then you get defensive, right? You're like, who the hell's this? Never even heard of this person. And then what do you want to do? You want to get rid of the person. However, there are some people, if they ask for permission, they're polite. I don't mind hearing them. It doesn't actually bother me, but it has to be quick.
Yeah.
Because some people are like, do you have 15 minutes? It's like,
no.
No.
That's what you would do on a sales discovery call once you've got permission from the client. You don't have permission to the client to actually engage, and yet you want me to give you 15 minutes? And the work, and then the other thing which really upsets a lot of people is you actually don't even know the client's pain and problems. When we do training, one of the key things is that I want to come across as an expert. So research and research into potential pain and problems of the target market, you really need to know that intimately. So, you know, whenever we're selling our training services and we've got our own salespeople, we have someone who actually does a lot of research into a niche market. And we go, okay, let's really understand this niche market, because that three key pain points are so important when we engage with you in that cold calling. When you don't know me and you give me permission to talk to you and I go, pain point one, pain point two, pain point three, would it be worthwhile for us to engage further to discuss how we've actually helped solve this problem with other clients? Would you be open to having, you know, half an hour of your time whereby I can send you a Teams meeting and we can go through in detail and show you what we've done? That approach works close to nearly 90% of the time. Whereas we see the sales process, the first part is, hey, first impressions are lasting impressions. So let me make my impression. That first 30 to 40 seconds is crucial. And one of the key things is, It's a bit of a game for me as well, because I enjoy it so much, is that if I get someone on a call and they're talking to me, I just feel so good in what I've done, because I've called someone up cold out of the blue. They don't even know me, yet they've given me a minute of their time, and then they've given me half an hour to pre-book a discovery session with me whereby I have a very specific sales process where I lead them through. And then it goes to this third stage of the sales process. And then there's a fourth stage, and then I'm moving the deal forward. And I think most people actually try and condense the whole system into one call, and it just doesn't work.
Definitely doesn't work. I'm definitely with you on that front. You mentioned before, though, people are desperate. Give me an example of what desperation looks like.
Speeds and fees, right? We've got the best product at the present moment. Our cybersecurity solution has been rated as the top 10 in the Gartner index. And what we've found is that this is what we. And what it comes across is that
there's too many we's.
We too many we's. And when I hear that, I go, okay, if there is a savvy IT manager and he wants a solution, he's going to smell opportunity for a discount here. And people just don't get it. Listen to how many times you use the word we if you record your phone calls. I mean, we record a lot of phone calls for our clients, and then there's phone calls that are analyzed. If we are talking we, it's all about how great and good and my product is. And unfortunately, there's no communication regarding pain or problems of the client and what it's cost the client. It's very, very old type of selling. And that old type of selling worked really well maybe 15, 20 years ago, when there wasn't so much proliferation of similar products, when there wasn't access to so much data whereby you could come across as being really, really knowledgeable. But unfortunately, the sales process has not kept up to changing access to information, changing customer psychology, customer buying strategies. These speeds and feeds still permeates all discussions. It was actually interesting. I've got access to some really interesting research. You know, I think you know the research house whereby, you know, they talk to 200 CTOs who give insights into where their technology spend is going to be. Yet when that data is given to a vendor's salespeople, they can't make head or sense of it. But it's such valuable data because it gives you the CTO of a major company telling you where they're going to go with their technology, yet everyone defaults to speeds and fees. So I think people are scared. Fundamentally, one key thing, rejection.
Yeah, well, look, no one enjoys being rejected, but it's part of the process. I mean, you're in sales, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think it's understanding that it will happen. But I mean, it's not going to define you at the end of the day. Okay, someone says no, now what happens? Nothing. You're not going to be dead. You'll just go on to the next one. That just builds resiliency though. And I mean, look, I wouldn't say I'm some full-blown salesperson. I remember the first cold call I ever did, the guy hung up on me. He was like, sorry, what? Who are you? Like, what is this? I panicked. I mean, I was 24 years old and they're like, okay, KB, go out and sell. And I've been on a client my entire life. And I was like, okay, called this company up and like it went badly. And that's why I started getting into building a brand. And that's how I got into the business I'm doing today. This is going back a long time ago. But for me, I panicked. And then I felt like I was down the dumps because I'm like, I've been rejected. Like, this sucks. Like, the guy thinks I'm a loser. But then I'm thinking, like, that guy just went about his day, right? He doesn't even know who I am because I probably didn't communicate who the hell I was. So I think that it's part and parcel of doing the sales job.
Well, you know, here's the interesting thing. He says, if you don't want to get hurt, don't play rugby league, right? The faster you accept it, that no is part of the job of getting, and it's also about perception of no. I mean, I tell all of the salespeople that I work with, I ask them, what does no stand for? And no, split it up, goes next one, next one, next one, next one, next one. And the real challenge is that most people put so much emphasis on the result instead of the emphasis on the process and having a conversation. When you don't have any hidden agenda and all you're there to do is to have a conversation that is structured without being desperate and going, well, no, every call has to result in a meeting. No, every call has to result in you either qualifying the client in or out and moving to the next stage of the sales process. Because if you think that every call has got a result, has to have a result, then you're living and dying by your result. You're not living and dying by your process. You're focusing on all the wrong stuff. As you know, I mean, I play competitive sports. Imagine you're being defined by your wins and losses. Die 1,000 deaths because, you know, Jesus, I lost this week, I'm a loser. I mean, I go into the stats of, you know, as you know, tennis is a big thing in my family. You know, did you know that close to nearly 80% of most tennis players lose more often than they win? They lose in the first round. They have to hang around for another 7 days to play another tournament. What are they going to do? Mope around or practice and get better for the next one? And one of the key things I've often said about sales is that sales is a beautiful industry to be involved in because it gives you a ton of practice on clients. That's why you find any salesperson who loves to prospect, and I'll tell you one person, that person will be the guy that is the most successful, hits all his revenue targets, and makes the most money. And I often said that, you know, sort of jumping around, but sales is broken up into three components is prospecting, closing, and farming. A number of approaches here that I've spoken about, but most people are very, very comfortable in farming. Unfortunately, it's important and will generate revenue. But if you want to grow your business quickly, you actually need new business development skills to go out and hunt for business. Because if you can't do it, which is, I think there was some crazy stat that close to nearly 70 or 80% of most managed service providers in Australia don't go above $5 million over a 10 or 15 year lifespan.
I do understand and I do get it. And that's why I wanted to bring you on the show. But just to go back a step, you mentioned before no's and you can look at it as next one.
Yeah.
So just to press on a little bit more. So if I'm a client, I'm going to know as a salesperson while I am one of 100, for example, how do you find the balance between not coming across disingenuous where it's like, okay, whatever you said, no, next. Because no one ever wants to feel like they're just a number. Yeah. And how do you find that equilibrium?
Once again, it comes down to your own mentality around it. Whenever I'm teaching this or I'm doing it for myself, my emphasis is always to have a genuine conversation with someone. That's just my views on it. I'm not there to trick people into having a meeting. I have a very specific objective of the phone call. If those objectives aren't met, okay, well, it's fine. You know, that client is not my avatar. It's not my perfect client. I go on to the next one and I wish them well. And they're not the ideal client, then we just delete them from our CRM system because there's no point in anyone calling them up. It's just a waste of time. It's a business decision. It's not a personal decision.
So what about people that are just smooth operators? So like sometimes if I'm dealing with someone in sales and I feel like it just comes across like it's just way too over rehearsed, it actually puts me off. So how do you deal with, yes, okay, this person on paper is probably hitting the pitch, saying all the things, but it just comes across a bit cringe. How do you deal with that?
It's actually interesting. Human beings are really hardwired to smell bullshit real quick because it's that fear trigger within ourselves that gets triggered. Are you talking from a client perspective or are you talking about from a salesperson's perspective?
From a client perspective.
There's a salesperson calling you up and you're the vendor and you have a salesperson who sounds very cringy, very smooth. How do you change that?
Yeah, most definitely. Because I put it back in my own shoes of when in the past I've dealt with someone, I don't know, probably even outside of our industry, that's just been a smooth operator. There's just something about it. It lends itself to the disingenuous speak I was saying before. Like, and I see through that and I'm just like, yeah, okay, whatever. I do an internal eye roll. Yeah. So if people are doing that in this market, I mean, people will see through that as well. So how do you handle that? I mean, if someone's listening to this like, ooh, maybe that's me, what can they do to sort of change that approach? Because it does come across disingenuous and it comes across as, okay, next one.
It comes down to the intention of the salesperson, right? If your intention is to actually help, is to help the client, that comes across. The energy is communicated unconsciously. We talk about unconscious influence, whereby if you are genuine in your desire to help someone, that comes across. And if your intention is to manipulate or treat that person as a number, that comes across very, very clearly. Sales is a long game as well. These people who are very smooth operators, you often see them moving from one company to another company within, you know, a year because they've been found out. It comes down to the intention of the salesperson. And can it be taught? Well, we're going deeper into character, right? What's the character of that salesperson? And character is how you define yourself in life. If you have good character, then it comes across. If you have bad character, it's very easy to see that kind of, you can smell that kind of bullshit on people very, very quickly. I actually have come across very slimy salespeople and they're successful for a while before they get found out. And you'll see them moving from one company to another company all the time. And it's just that they see relationships with clients as transactions. Can you change it? Well, you can't change everyone's mentality or their approach. There really is, you know, you've got to go back and actually look at yourself and go, what kind of person am I? I always talk about salespeople becoming role models. We're already really big into culture, and being a role model has certain characteristics of character. When you see high performing, it's really quite interesting. When you see high performing salespeople, the ones that we're around all the time, they actually display really high character, good character traits, good emotional intelligence. They're not the slimy, you know, the ones that just want your money and once they've got it, see you later, you never see them again. It's actually quite an interesting phenomenon. When you see high-performing salespeople, they tend to have good character traits as well. It comes in, I suppose, that's my view on it anyway.
Yeah, that's a great way of looking at it. So if I'm a sales director and I've got George and Jennifer, they're a bit slimy, they're a bit too smooth operators. Would you suggest that they should get rid of those people? Because they may potentially impact the overall brand of the company if they've got these slimy operators. What would be your advice then? Because again, unfortunately in this space, if I'm working with a company, for example, let's use outside of cybersecurity, and I have one slimy sales operator, it kind of ruins my image then of that brand. So if I'm running a sales team, would you then sort of say, hey, I think this person just isn't the right fit? And as you said, a leopard can't change its spots a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Is it just best to let them know, hey, your approach needs to change, it comes across disingenuous? Because you've got to think about the long-term impact. If this person keeps doing that, burning people, it has a flow-on effect of other people's image of that brand. What would be your advice towards that?
Well, it's a real dilemma because, so for example, I've got in a different sector where we're training, we've got one salesperson who acts like a gorilla in that business and they are a top performer and the CEO is making a decision ultimately that's going to affect the business. There's short-term thinking and there's long-term thinking that's going to sway the CEO. He's got to think, if I get rid of this million-dollar producer, I'm not going to have that million-dollar income that this guy brings in. But then again, the biggest business risk this CEO has is that he's putting all his eggs in one basket with this sales guy to bring in the bucks. And if that sales guy is off or decides to go somewhere else, he's really stuck. He's made the decision to terminate this guy and decided to hire 2 to 3 other salespeople that he can build a good culture around. And he's willing to sacrifice short-term pain in sales to bring across 3 to 4 salespeople who he can count on for the next 5 to 10 years. Now, it might take him 6 months to bring that revenue on. He's prepared to do it. I've been working with him for a while. And what he did is he banked all the income coming in from this high performer, and he used it as a safety basket to recruit other salespeople, and he got rid of this guy. And the culture within the business has improved. It's actually interesting. The sales have actually improved quite a lot for that company, and they've been able to attract better talent because what this gorilla did, he upset a lot of people. He acted like he was the kingpin in that place. He acted like it. It affected other people. They didn't feel like, you know, it was a business they wanted to stay in. Ultimately, he was paying the price in people leaving. And once he got, it's just like a dysfunctional football team. You might have someone who's got extreme talent, but they upset the apple cart because they don't work as a team. And to grow his business, and his business growth is highly dependent on process, systems, and people. So he had the systems well, he had the processes really, really well, but he was being let down by people. He made a business decision and said, I want to grow my business. Can this person be a long-term part of the growth strategy in this business? And he came to the realization, no. So he got rid of that person. It really comes down to personal preferences and also whether you can stand losing that person from a revenue perspective or not. There's a big difference between having a gorilla who's earning and being very successful to a rainmaker. Well, what we've actually seen is rainmakers tend to display very good characteristics. I keep on harping about character. That's, you know, that's really, really important. I suppose you look at role models, you look at high character traits, because especially in sales, if you're in it for the long term, then that's what builds relationships with clients who want to stay with you, not just for one-off deal, but, you know, that everyone keeps on telling me about if we're going into business, you know, monthly recurring revenue, upsell, cross-sell, all this kind of stuff. Well, that is all dependent upon having salespeople who are genuinely good at their job, but also have the intention in the right place. That's my views on it anyway. So it's a very personal thing. Sometimes you can't afford to get rid of that, what I call the gorilla in your team, because he brings in so much of the big bucks and you've got to suck it up. It's a personal choice. You suck it up or you do something about it. There's no hard and fast rule. But ultimately, when you do have a gorilla that upsets the apple cart, it's also going to upset you, your mentality, and which is one of the reasons why, as I mentioned to you before, some of these managed service providers don't grow because they have ineffective salespeople working within their businesses. And it's a people game, you know, unless you're one of these coders who can create unbelievable new types of software, you sell the software, you don't make it. So you better get really, really good at selling the stuff, and it's done through people. You know, even if you want a recurring model, someone's got to speak to someone at the end of the day.
Yeah, most definitely. And I ask that because multiple people that I know have said, oh, you know, I'm in a company and there's a top biller in there and they're billing, you know, have done for years, but the culture, They're not nice to us. They walk around like they own the joint. And there's a lot of that, which then, you know, I don't know whether I couldn't tell you if the clients like them, but they must be good at what they did. But then it sort of upsets the rest of the business. And then other people feel that the company favors them because it's about they're the top biller. So what about us? So I was just genuinely curious about that.
Well, it's a decision that sales directors need to make about their people, you know. And unfortunately, many sales directors, as they say, are stuck between a rock and a hard place. They've got to meet quarterly objectives. Some of them don't actually understand the business risks they're operating when you have that kind of person operating in the business, because these people will want more money, will move if they're offered more money from a competitor, and then where are you at? You've got a whole bunch of other people who are upset in being in an environment that doesn't support them, and then you're left in a lurch because this guy goes somewhere else. It's a really difficult situation, but it comes down to standards, right? If you have good operating standards, both in behavior as well, then you develop a high-performing team. It's just like, you know, if you look at any high-performing sports team, what do they actually have in spades? They have people of good character who will stand by each other and they work as a team. I'm not talking about, you know, behavior outside of the pitch, but I'm talking about the behavior as working as a team that everyone has. They can trust each other. You know, for example, rugby, you know, you watch the All Blacks. What kind of culture do they actually have that develops a high-performing team that consistently achieves amazing winning ratios? And then you look at other teams that don't have that mentality and they go up and down. So character is defining about culture, but most sales directors don't want to go there because it's difficult for them to recruit for high character versus someone who can actually sell. I firmly believe you can actually get both if you do it correctly.
So what about the theory that people walk around and say, oh, sales is hard? What do you think about that? I mean, it sounds like a counterintuitive question to ask you because you're the person that trains people in sales and has done for 3 decades. But where does that stem from?
If people say sales is hard, perhaps you've got to look at the people. Maybe they're the wrong type of people to be involved in that setting in itself. Actually, it kind of lends itself to, you know, the emotional intelligence training that we do. And you did that emotional intelligence test. So I could actually relay it back to you and talk about your results. And then I'll actually talk about why people say sales is hard. We've just done sales training for a very major German car brand. It was actually looking at specific emotional intelligence patterns that we use to profile the ideal traits for a salesperson. And as I said before, sales can be broken down to the 3 core functions, which is prospecting or hunting, closing the deal, and farming. And where sales becomes hard is look at the salesperson that you're asking them to do something that they're not comfortable in doing. Ask a farmer to make 30 to 40 cold calls in a day, and they are really going to struggle. They're brilliant in expanding sales volumes to current clients. But inherently, what we see with farmers is they're really, really good at understanding features and benefits. They usually need a lot of high validation. Whereas if you talk to a hunter, a genuine hunter, he's not going to worry whether you like him or not. He's there to do the deal. And when you look at both the prospecting, closing, or hunting, they're similar but really niche skill sets. For myself, I personally like prospecting and closing. The farming, I really, really struggle with, and I leave it to others in my team to do. I get the most enjoyment out of prospecting and closing. It's a game that I like to play. Now, when we see people who say sales is hard, if I was to talk about your emotional intelligence that you did, it's actually quite interesting how you display so many good characteristics for sales. So we tested 4 attributes of yourself. We tested your sensitivity rating. We tested your goal achievement focus. We also tested your logical thinking and your energy levels. If I was to look at hiring you, there's only probably one area that I would be looking to work on, but you rated a really good score in sensitivity. You had a low scoring on sensitivity. And when I talk about a low score on sensitivity, that means you don't feel rejection. You just get on to the next one. Criticism, rejection doesn't actually faze you a lot. And a highly sensitive person is not a person that lacks empathy. In fact, it's quite, you'll find that sensitive people who move on very, very quickly from rejection or failed deals have very high empathy. They actually understand people really well. So you actually had a really good score. You're off the charts when it comes to goal achievement and goal orientation. You're very, very goal driven. Would that be true?
Yeah, I would say most people in the market would describe me as that, yes.
Yes, okay. Yeah, you just got to go after it no matter what, and you won't stop or quit until you get there. You display very, very good logical thinking ability, and your energy levels, what we call about midterm. What is really, really good, if we're looking, and we've profiled 1,000 salespeople using our test, there is a very defined, what we call million-dollar producer. They rate very low on sensitivity, which you did. They rate very high on achievement, which you did. They rate low on thinking, which you don't. And they rate very high on energy. Once again, very goal-orientated and high energy. So they'll just keep going until they actually get the deal. And so if we're looking at salespeople who are more farming-orientated, they will be very, very high on sensitivity, very low on goal orientation, high on thinking ability, and low energy levels. Because if you are a true salesperson, a true hunter, you're going to be very goal-orientated, and you're going to have high energy levels to keep going, because the nature of sales is that you're going to get a lot more no's, but you've got to keep going with the high energy levels. Otherwise, you know, if you quit after five calls because you got rejected, there's not much hope for you in sales. That's in a nutshell, is sales is hard for the wrong people.
So let's get some of my flaws, because I want to keep it real. So obviously, if you were, you said there's an area you want to improve on, would you be able to share a little bit more? I'm quite comfortable sharing that I'm not perfect. And if you were to test me on that 6 or 7 years ago, it'd be very different. I just had to build resiliency doing this business after almost 6 years. So I think it's changed over time. My outlook has changed. So I'm genuinely curious to hear where I should improve.
So this is really interesting. I can't mention the German brand that we did the test with. There's nothing to be improved in your sensitivity rating. That sensitivity rating, I'm very, very comfortable with. So if I was hiring you as a salesperson, the only thing I would be focusing on is improving your energy levels. And that would mean maybe a little bit more structure. It may mean that you get a mentor who works with you and goes, okay, Carissa, you're extremely goal-orientated. You like to get out there and close deals, get on to the next one. And so the biggest challenge for you is, A, you need to go out there and get new deals, but then you also need to fulfill those deals. It's about looking at your job functionality. If you keep their jobs really, really simple, then all they see is a CRM system that is not a complicated CRM system, that is very, very structured for sales hunting, removes the distraction of doing anything else. So if I'm hiring a deal maker, then I go, this is what you do every day. You come in, you've got to hit these phone calls. This is your target market. You need to get X amount of meetings, X amount of deals. You need the area that I would be working with you on is, how can I get Carissa's energy levels up? What I need to do is investigate what happens to her during the day. Why is this energy level not higher? Why it's at an average rating of 29. If I can get that up to 36, 37, each of these ratings is based on mathematics. Like if I can improve this number by 3 basis points, that equates to an extra $20,000 or $30,000 of revenue for that salesperson. So if I get the energy levels up in yourself, that would mean that I would get more output from you on a daily basis. Everything else is really, really cool. And it might mean that I need to sit down with you and figure out, where is Carissa's energy going? Why is it at this level? What's going on? And that's a part of, you know, going through the emotional intelligence is self-discovery is important. And also, you know, working with someone who can actually go, tell me what your day-to-day looks like. Where is all this time and energy going that keeps you at this average level? What do we need to do to get you extremely focused on what you need to do? And it could be that you've got too much on your plate. When you have too much on your plate, it also dissipates your energy.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think it's just because I have to oversee the delivery of the business as well, so your energy probably gets dispersed. I think what you presented is bang on. I become more sensitive especially being an entrepreneur, I really understand when people talk to me about certain things. I think that comes with age too. Now, I'm not saying I'm in my 30s, but I would say even the last few years, my sensitivity towards people's situations have significantly changed. And also being an entrepreneur myself, I've seen a lot of things and I've been through a lot of things, so I can understand. So my empathy is really there.
Yeah.
So if someone says like, hey, Carissa, we can't do this, I get it. I understand. So I think that I see that as a bonus of caring about the person and then really empathizing with their position that they're in. So yeah. I see it as a good thing. So I think your read from the test is accurate.
Yeah, well, because each person is, every salesperson, every person is unique in their attributes and traits. What your trust trying to do is, how can I minimize my hiring to avoid making mistakes? Because it's a very costly to hire someone, spend time training them, spend time exposing them to your database and your clients, and they don't do anything for 6 months. And so, you know, you need to be hiring very, very slowly, and you need to be firing really, really quickly. Because, you know, if you're hiring salespeople and it's a business development activity, within 2 weeks, you can tell if the person's going to cut it or not just by looking at their activity levels. You'll often find hunters who are really, really, who have this high attribute are very resourceful. You know, they'll find ways of meeting someone, getting meetings, moving deals forward. They'll actually, because they have this hunting mentality, this ability to look for situations and find opportunities. Whereas most salespeople who don't have a very high goal orientation, because goals define behaviors, right? So if you have a very defined goal for your quarter and you've broken it back and go, geez, I need to be hitting, you know, I need to be doing at least 20 calls a day, because based upon my statistics, I'll get, you know, 20 calls at 100 a week. And if I have 15 conversations, 7 are going to lead to meetings, 3 are going to lead to a deal, and I've got one deal and that deal's worth, you know, $100,000. Geez, if I keep on doing that, what most people don't understand is that if you keep on doing that, your numbers actually get better. So you'll actually find that out of those 100 calls, you actually springboard from having 7 conversations to having 7 very good conversations that go from, you know, 7, you know, 3 meetings to having 6 meetings to having 7 meetings. And then suddenly your business explodes, but it can only explode if you do that preliminary work at the start, which is building capability, and capability leads to confidence. And I think psychologically, a lot of people are wanting the confidence before they actually do the work. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. You've actually got to do the work to get the confidence. And, you know, analysis and paralysis. Therefore, when, you know, when people say sales is hard, is because they're trying to find a perfect solution. There is none. There is no better time to make a call than to make a call. Sales is very, very, there's very simple metrics, as I said before. You find a top performer, you'll find that they actually prospect more for than anyone else. It's very, very simple. It's pervasive in every industry. We train a lot of the top German brands in automotive, one particular car dealership, and there might be 20 salespeople, and you'll find 3 that are far exceeding everyone else. They're all selling the same thing, but these guys have got full calendars. Why do they do that? Because they're hunting. Why? Because they want to, and they like it, and they like to make deals. So sales is only hard for the wrong person, in a nutshell.
You made so many great points, and I could talk to you forever, but I want to be able to conclude our interview today. So is there anything specific, Pancho, you want to leave our audience with? I know we've spoken about a lot. We've gone on tangents. That's what I love about this show and this podcast. It is about tangent. It is about getting real and raw conversations out of people. And I think I could sit here and talk to you for another 30 minutes. But what is it that you'd love to leave our audience with after they've listened to this interview?
If you really want to succeed in sales and have a team that's performing, you need to develop an up-to-date sales strategy. You need to understand there's some key fundamentals that don't change if you want to grow your business. Every person needs to know their goals and objectives. You need to focus on tracking very simple things. You know, I like to measure activity. I like to measure calls. I like to record calls to meeting ratios to deals. One of the things that I think most important that people should really focus on is not the number of deals they've closed, but how long it takes them to close a deal. I'm really looking, because time is money in any kind of business. Mentality and ability go hand in hand. And you know, you need an up-to-date sales strategy that is up-to-date for the current market at the present moment. We're dealing in a market that's changing all the time. Technology is changing. But what about the sales strategy? Doesn't it have to reflect the changing environment? Doesn't it have to reflect the changing psychology of salespeople? And until you do that, you're kind of playing a numbers game without any hope of improving. And that's what I think people need to understand, that psychology and technology need to go hand in hand at the end of the day.
Yeah, I love that. I think these are really excellent points. And I really love the sentiment just at the end saying how long it takes to close a deal rather than the number of deals. And I think that is something that people should be focusing on when they are in this sales game. So thanks, Pancho, for coming on the show. Absolutely loved having this interview with you. You've made some really great points, and I believe it'll be very insightful for our audience. So thanks for your time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope that you found today's episode useful and you took away a few key points. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get our latest episodes.
This podcast is brought to you by Mercsec, the specialists in security, search, and recruitment solutions. Visit mercsec.com to connect today.
If you'd like to find out how KBI can help grow your cyber business, then please head over to kbi.digital.
This podcast was brought to you by KBI.media, the voice of cyber.